cogitating Steinmetz and use an open-faced club, a sandwich.
Open-faced club sandwich.
Hello and welcome to the Advanced Ball Striking Radio Show, and in the words of the great Troy McClure, I'm Rod Murray, and you might remember me from such classics as a couple of episodes of this show that we did last year. My apologies to the listeners and to Lag himself. I have been a bit absent for about the last 8 months, but hoping to remedy that starting from today. You see, about 8 months ago, myself and Lag were lucky enough to convince one of Australia's best players to spend some time on the phone talking about the game, the golf swing, the equipment, and everything else related to golf and life. Now, that man was generous enough to give us 2 hours of his time. But for a combination of reasons, none of which I'm even going to pretend are legitimate, I hadn't got around to editing and publishing that interview until now. So apologies to Lag and to the listeners. However, on the upside, I am hoping that today's chat and the three that are to come after will have been worth the wait. Now, I can almost hear you all asking yourselves, just who is it that we're going to meet today? We'll try to contain your excitement, and I'll let you in on the secret. It is none other than the not as well known as he should be, Bill Dunk, one of Australia's finest ball strikers, and I'll be honest with you, about as down-to-earth a bloke as you're ever likely to meet. Now, as I mentioned at the outset, the whole interview does run about 2 hours, and let's be honest, that's really too much to take in one sitting. So I've broken it down into 4 roughly equal parts, which we're going to put up over the next 4 weeks. So in this first segment, I opened the interview by running Bill through his Wikipedia profile just to confirm if some of the amazing statistics contained therein were in fact true. Wikipedia tells me you won 5 Australian PGA Championships and the New Zealand Open. Well, I know that. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, I won a couple of New Zealand Opens.
Over 100 tournaments and broke more than 80 course records. Is that true?
Well, that's true, yeah.
That is remarkable.
I played in places where nobody else played.
I think you're probably being a little self-effacing. Now, an interesting statistic, you may or might know whether this is true. In 1970, they say that you led the world scoring average from Jack Nicklaus with an average score of 70.21 for 110 rounds. True? Yeah,
that's true.
Wow, amazing. Now, what is it? Coffs Harbour 1 year, 1971, I think it was. You were 11 under through 12 holes, correct?
Yes.
Bill, you can play a bit, can't you?
Oh, not now. I haven't played for 9 years.
Well, I know that, and I wanted to come to that a little bit later and we'll find out what you're doing now. But I wanted to take you back to that era. When did you turn professional? What year? I think you were born in 1938?
38, yeah. I was 17 when I turned pro.
All right. And
around, just a guess, around 56 or 7.
Mm-hmm. Was that a big deal at the time, Bill, to become a professional golfer? We certainly didn't see the money in the game in those days that we see now. Was that something people advised you to do?
No, I was advised not to do it, especially by my folks.
Mm-hmm. And was that sensible advice at the time?
Oh, yes. My mother was always sensible, but I wasn't. And I ended up that way.
Indeed. Of course, it did work out all right for you, didn't it, Bill? You had quite a long career. I mean, your longevity. I think you played sort of well into the late 70s or even the early 80s.
Yeah. And I finished up later than that in Japan, playing on the Japanese senior circuit.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll come to some of that as well. I know that Lag has a bunch of questions he wants to ask you too, but I wanted to come to this one first. You mentioned there that you played in Japan. Now, when we think of great names in Australian golf, your name is always mentioned, but I don't think we know as much about you, as much as we should about you, as perhaps we do with some of the others, and some from your era, Kel Nagel, Von Nieder, Peter Thompson, Frank Phillips, and some of those players. Why do you think you don't sort of haven't had as much attention as them? I suppose most of them won a bigger event on one of the circuits. But do you have a feeling as to why You sort of everyone knows who you are, but they don't know as much about you.
No, when I was playing, there wasn't that much money in it, and I didn't travel too much, other than New Zealand, Australia, Japan. I didn't go much further than that. I did spend 3 years on the American tour, but that was early in the piece. After those 3 years, I come home and got married, and I thought, well, I've got to make a living somehow. I just watched what I did, you know, sort of. I didn't believe that it was worthwhile to go play in the British Open, for instance, because they were playing for £6,000 in those days.
Mm-hmm.
It nearly cost me that to get there.
I seem to recall Kel Nagle told me he won £1,100 for winning the British Open, and about 5 years earlier he'd bought his first car and it cost £800.
So
it puts it in perspective, doesn't it?
That's about right, yeah. And I just didn't feel that it was worth doing those things. So I stuck to Australia. I took a job at a place called Fox Hills in the western suburbs of Sydney. I still played golf and let my wife bring up 3 kids and run the shop and whatever. And then a little bit of money started to get into the game, and I spent most of my time playing golf then.
Right, trying to get there always seems to have been what sounds like it may have been a myth that you weren't a fan of travelling, Bill, whether it be some sort of a apprehension about flying or you just didn't like to be away from home. That's not the case? It was simply a financial decision?
It was just a financial decision, yeah.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Lag, I know you've got a bunch of questions for Bill, as do I, but I'd like you to jump in now because people get bored with listening to me. I even get bored with listening to me. So fire some questions at Bill.
Well, you did play in the British Open once.
I played in one, yes.
Okay.
I went over there to play a couple of times, actually, and my dad died in one the day before it started.
Oh, my.
And there's a bushfire on the golf course, which is more like Australia than Britain.
In Britain?
Yeah.
There was a bushfire?
Yeah, it was very dry, and someone dropped a cigarette, and it started a bushfire, and that sort of stopped the tournament for a while. And,
wow. What course was that at, Bill?
It's well known too. My memory's going. I think I got Alzheimer's.
I doubt that. We can come back. When it dawns on you in 15 minutes' time, you can just blurt it out and we'll know what you were talking about.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what style of player were you? From what I understand, you were maybe not the longest hitter, but you were really, really an accurate striker.
I wouldn't say that. I practiced hard. I did lots of practice. I suppose my short game was the best part of my game.
Those course records, Bill, and 80 of them, I mean, that's an impressive statistic in its own, but it does suggest that you could get very hot and shoot very low numbers. What do you recall about those rounds? Obviously, there's plenty of them to look back on, but what was the key to it when you were shooting those low numbers?
I believe that in those days, the golf courses we played here were not your top grade golf courses, and they always put the flag at the back of the green and made it as long as they could, and if you happened to hit it over the back of the green, well, you shot 80. If you happened to hit it right on the spot, you shot 60.
Uh-huh.
And that's about what it amounts to.
Uh-huh.
So it's just one of those things.
All right, so you obviously managed your game well on those rounds by the sound of it, where your striking was good and your distance control was good.
Yeah, well, for years there I just played by eye, because at one time Peter Thompson said, oh, I don't take any notice of yardages and all that sort of stuff. He said, I use my eye and go by mouth. And I was doing that for a while, and until I hit it over too many Well, it, actually, the hard ball came out at that time with the sirloin cover.
Mm.
And every once in a while, it'd fly a bit further than you wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a couple of flyers with it, and you're over the back of the green, and you're wasting your time over there. So, and then I started to use the ballata ball, wouldn't use anything else, and then I had my yard. We used to measure up the course myself, and I found that, you know, I wouldn't go past the flag. So.
What sort of era was that, Bill? Because that playing by eye was the standard procedure for all of the top players, probably until into the 1960s, I'm guessing. Jack Nicklaus is the one who's credited with making that popular. I don't know how true that is, but was it around that time that people started to really do yardages?
It must have been, because I went to America in 62, 63, 64, I think it was, and I came back from there. Everyone was starting to do it then, so I don't know who started it, but and you know, I can't go down and buy a book like they do these days.
Well, no.
When they got it all lasered and whatever, I got to do it myself because my yards are a bit smaller than most.
Well, I think Lag's got some questions for you, and we might talk about your golf swing and some of the keys to it. Lag, we were discussing just before we got Bill on the other end of the line, and Bill, you, not in a disrespectful way, you're not a tall man, are you? And so I imagine that would have had some impact on your swing.
No, I'm 5'6¼".
Mm-hmm.
Give
or take.
And I measured it, and I add the quarter. I'd like to be about 5'10". But I've never been that way, and I'm not the biggest, strongest fella that you've ever seen, but used to do a lot of exercise.
Bill, did you set up your irons a little bit flat then?
Yeah, reasonably flat.
Do you think that gave you an advantage in your ball striking, playing off flat lie angles? I mean, I'm personally playing off irons that are 6 degrees flat, and I find that I never miss the green long and left anymore.
Yeah, well, that was always my problem. I was always a hooker, and I'd miss the green more often left than any time. But in the last while, I've learnt to know where the top of the backswing was. Didn't get quick, and you know, if the flag was on the right hand side of the green, I'd be on the left hand side of the flag, and if it was on the left hand side of the green, I'd be on the right hand side of the flag. So I was looking at percentages all the time there.
In the modern age, Bill, equipment is such a technological thing. There are all sorts of crazy things now for the players. They go to these fitting centres of the major manufacturers who sponsor them, and there's all sorts of machines and computers and amazing things to tell them what clubs suit their swing. What was the equipment, setting up the equipment like back then? Did you do your own? How did that work? I assume you had a club sponsor?
Yes. It wasn't until I started the senior tour that steelheads started to come in, or they were in, and I'd never used them. I always used the wooden ones, and I'd retired from the main tour by then, and they asked me to go and play in the Japanese Senior Open, and I went over there. I'd grabbed the clubs out of the garage where they'd been for 2 years, practiced like hell, went over there and ran third, and they paid me more money than I'd ever seen before. And I thought, this is good. How do I get onto this?
This is a good one.
And they said, well, keep coming back. So I was back there for, I suppose it must have been 6 or 7 years.
Mm.
So...
What years were that? Was that in the late 80s?
Well, I know I was 49 going on 50. So that's
87, 88, around that sort of
time.
And when that happened, when you went back to, well, you essentially started a second career by the sound of it for a couple of years playing senior golf, as far as the equipment went, had there been some changes? Did you then change clubs or did you stick with your old equipment? What did you notice about the equipment? Because that would have been around the time we were starting to see some of these technological things.
I probably owned 200 drivers at one stage, and I'd set them up the same way each time. And
did you do that yourself?
Yes.
Right.
And I had graphite shafts, longer than standard, steel head, I brought this shaft back from Japan there at one stage, and I thought, I'll set it up the same way as the others. And it was going 30 yards further, and I thought, you beauty, I found it. And I had three or four more practice hits with it, and it snapped in my hands.
Oh.
And that's the only one I've ever found that'd go further.
A cruel joke to be played on a man in that position, Bill. Cruel joke indeed. What about the irons and during your normal playing days? Did you set up your own clubs, and how did you do that? Did you do it by, did you know what your specifications were, or was it trial and error, and did you bend them yourself and change the specs?
There was a fellow by the name of Sandy. He was an old Scotsman working for Schlesinger in those days. And Lee Trevino had four or five sets of blank heads made up. He made them. And they didn't have any advertising on them at all. He wouldn't know where they came from. And they were a third-grade set of golf clubs in this country. They were cheap ones. And he had them set up the same. And Sandy used to make my clubs, and he'd make a set of clubs each year when a different model came out. And they'd be exactly the same as the last set. As a matter of fact, I went in there one time, picked up this set, and I put on the ground. I said, Sandy, there's something wrong with this. And he said, it's exactly the same as the others. I said, no, it's not. There's something different. And he took it over to the Linushul belt, looked at it, give it one hit on the Linushul belt, handed it back to me, and I said, that's perfect. So, you know, that's how freaky these things are. But I honestly don't believe, in my situation, that golf clubs make that much difference to me.
Indian than the arrow.
I can't hit it any further with these big-headed things and whatever. And it doesn't matter how long they last, than the one I had in the first place. I hit it. They go further than the wooden ones, of course. I can't believe that they make that much difference. And as far as cavity backs or whatever, I don't believe that makes any difference. Because I believe that you've got to hit it in the middle of the club to get a good shot. Doesn't matter what club you use.
Amen.
And there it is.
That's music to Lag's ears, Bill, I can tell you, because this is what Lag prescribes, is that, you know, you can use all the, you know, aid, quote-unquote, equipment that you like, but at the end of the day, if you don't hit the ball in the middle of the club, it's not going to help
you.
No, that's exactly right. How did you sort of hone your swing? How did you learn to find the middle of the club? Did you have instruction as a youngster, or did you just... No, the famous Hogan line, dig it out of the dirt yourself.
No, I had two people help me, more than anybody. There was a fellow by the name of Peter Churcher. He was the local club pro. And
quite the heritage in that area, the Churcher family, aren't they, up at Gosford?
They are, yeah. And Peter used to spend a lot of time with me on the practice day. He'd come down early before work, and I'd be hitting balls there, and he'd come and watch for a while and say, just do that, and walk away. And I've been down there and had my hands bleeding and whatever, and throwing the club down there, and I think, that's it, I'm not going to play anymore. And I'd get up there, back to the shop, and I said, I'm not playing anymore. And he'd say, you're going to let it beat you, are you? And he'd sort of talk me around. And then he got me the job at as assistant pro at Ride Parramatta Golf Club. And there was a fellow by the name of Alexander Wilson, an old Scotsman. And he just happened to be Peter's old boss. And that's where Peter learned his trade from. And I spent 4 or 5 years with him down there. Dug a few ditches in the practice fairway. We could have used them for bunkers after we'd finished it. Anyway, and he used to come down each morning, bring me a piece of fruit. We'd walk down the middle of Victoria Road, down the centre line, which I couldn't do any of that these days. And I'd practice from daylight until I started work at 9 o'clock, and he'd stay there until 7:30 or so, and go home and have breakfast, come back to work, and I did that for ages. But anyway, they're the two people that, and they taught exactly the same way.
Well, I'm sure Lag's got some questions. He's the swing expert. I'm not. If you'd ever seen me play, you'd understand that fairly quickly. But I'm sure Lag's got some questions about some of the theories that they had on the golf swing. Lag, have you got some questions for Bill? I'm sure you do. You've seen his swing, obviously.
Yeah, I love your golf swing. Very compact, and it looked like you're a great hitter of the golf ball. You look very, very firm going through impact. I could see that from the some of the sequence photos. I actually have a copy of a book that you wrote years ago. I'm sure you probably remember that.
There was one book that brought it out in three different stages.
Yeah.
It was the same book, just added to.
So you mentioned their compact leg. What sorts of things do you see in Bill's swing? And I wonder if we could get his thoughts about perhaps what he's feeling in his swing with what you're seeing.
Well, I certainly saw a lot of leg action, a lot of great hip turn, and a lot of great use of the knees and footwork in the golf swing. Something that we don't see as much in the modern game. Everything looks very upper body now. Any thoughts on that, Bill? About how you used your lower body to swing the club?
Well, I was always taught to use my legs, but these days I'm trying to go the other way. Well, when I say these days, the last time I was seriously playing, I believe it's simpler than that, and you don't hit it with your knees anyway.
Not if you're any good anyway, Bill.
and that's why I was always a hooker, because, I felt that I used too much of my legs. I got ahead of it, and then I had to catch up and come over the top of the bloody thing, and I did it in the left bunker most times. But anyway, since I believe that you've got to feel the top of the backswing, you've got to know where that is, and your next job is to make the head of the club hit the back of the ball. And that's all I concentrated on.
And the bit in between the top of the backswing and the back of the ball, Bill, were there any thoughts about what you were trying to achieve there, or was it just simply an instinctive thing?
I was just trying to stay quieter than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had I fell over in a golf tournament in Japan, and I had what they call an acoustic neuroma, which is a tumor on the inner ear.
Ooh.
And it took them 13 hours to peel this thing off my a couple of balance nerves in my ear, and they had to take one of them. Well, they had to take the balance nerve out of my right ear, and I had a hell of a job after that. And one of the guys said to me, he said, "Turn your shoulders, get to the top of the backswing. Don't move your back and hit it with the head of the club." In other words, hit from the top and work fine. So, and he was a Canadian fellow by the name of Sandy Kasiba. Have you seen some of his trick shots?
I haven't. Lag, have you? You familiar with Sandy?
No, I haven't. I'm not familiar with him. I did spend a lot of time with Mo Norman. I don't know if you ever crossed paths with Mo.
No, I didn't ever meet Mo. But
sure, you heard the stories, like everybody else, though.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I watched Count Yogi give a clinic. I don't know if you remember him.
No, I don't remember him either.
No. Okay.
Interesting.
But Newton was the best I've seen from there. And Stan Leonard.
Right.
And they could both swing and play.
Mm-hmm. How about Al Balding?
Yeah, Al was good.
Mm-hmm.
Big, tall sucker. But, he could knock it out there. Still, most of them could.
I'm a big fan of George Knutson's golf swing. Do you have a George Knutson?
Yeah,
any thoughts on?
Yeah, he's a hell of a swinger too.
Hmm.
Hell of a player.
Bill, I get the feeling that perhaps you came from an era where guys just sort of learnt how to play, as you said, you know, perhaps have one or two guys work with them and help them with their swing, but there wasn't the sort of scrutiny of the various golf swings and what people were doing as what we see now. Would that be a fair assessment? If I asked you to analyse George Knutson's swing, would you be able to do that, or would you just know that he's a good player by watching him hit the ball?
I just know that he's a good player. I'm not into golf swings myself.
Mm-hmm.
Only what I do or what I did. I didn't want to know anybody else's. Mm. But I believe it's easier than what they make it. But that's me. And I like to keep it as simple as I possibly can.
Were you one who took to it fairly naturally and fairly quickly, Bill, when you first picked up a golf club? Did you have trouble actually hitting the ball, or were you one of those types who...
I can't remember. I was 3 years old when I started.
Maybe that's a bit of an advantage too. It's just you mentioned there that your problem shot being the hook. It tends to be the nemesis of the good player, the hook shot, doesn't it? Amateurs slice, good players tend to hook.
Yeah, they do. Mm. Because they overdo everything. And you've got to make a release, and if you overdo that, well, you hook.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Bill, did you play the small ball, the British ball, or did you play the bigger ball? I imagine you probably played both at various times.
Yeah, up until probably the mid-80s, I was using the small ball. And I learned to play golf with the small ball. I didn't like the big ball. Kept getting away from me. And I was always a problem that I wasn't quite long enough off the tee. I got it out there as far as most of them do, but there was always that guy that's going 30 odd yards further than me.
Some things never change in golf, do they, Bill?
No.
There's always one or two
that
stand out, particularly in the modern game. We see the distances they hit the ball now are... Well, they're kind of scary, aren't they?
Just to make, well, I think they're more athletic than they ever were.
Mm.
And they work at being athletes because there's so much money in the game. And you're finding that all the big, strong athletes are playing because of the money. And they're getting better and longer and... they're just amazing, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you think they're better, Bill, than players of your era? It seems to me that one of the things about professional golf in the modern age, what the equipment has done for the really good players, has taken out to a great extent the shot making, and it's become a game of hit it as far as you can, so you've got a shorter club in your hand as you possibly can for your second shot, whether it's on the fairway or not. It was a very different examination golf when you played at that level, wasn't it, where you needed to shape the ball, you needed to keep it in the fairways, you needed to do things with it. And it seems to me, as a spectator, that would have been a more interesting game to watch, and probably as a player as well.
I must admit, they don't manoeuvre the ball like we were taught to. But, I mean, it's not just get up there and thrash it as far as you can. You know, and especially in this country where we're playing a lot of wind, you have to be able to keep it low or hook it or slice it at will. And had to sort of manufacture shots more than they do these days. Britain's the same. You've got to, you know, manufacture shots there. But
there's a lot more ground game involved both here and in the UK, isn't there? What happens after the ball bounces as opposed to hitting it and having it stop where it lands?
Yeah, well, that is a different game altogether on some of those links courses. So it's the wind comes into it a lot more. You got to know what it's going to do up the other end. But I think that's only a matter of playing there a fair bit.
Mm.
It's like everything else. You usually find that the best shots come from after you've hit your worst one. You hit it in the trees, and now you've got to find a way out. And Woodsy doesn't have a bad job of getting them out of those places at times.
He's sevy-like at times, isn't he? Some of the positions he's managed to get the ball up and down from. And, Bill, it's funny you should mention that, because it would seem to me that that is as much about attitude as technical skill. And you strike me as a fairly competitive sort of bloke. I don't think I'd be wrong about that. You can't play golf at the top level unless you feel competitive and want to win. But as you say there, having hit the bad shot, is it the competitor within sometimes that dictates, you know, the spectacular shot that you play afterwards? And was that something that you tended to do well, like, as you say, with Tiger? You know, he hits his most spectacular shots generally, as you say, just after he's hit one of his worst.
Yeah. Well, that's the normal way of the game, and you seem to concentrate more with a shot that is going to take a little bit of effort to play it. You usually find that happens. Golf's a weird game. I don't know why people play it.
you and me both. And it's generally when you're on the course when you find yourself really wondering, what the hell am I doing out here? This is a waste of everybody's time. But there is an intrigue to it, isn't there, Bill? And I wonder whether that's part of it. Everybody's talking about trying to grow the game by making it easier. I tend to think the opposite, that it's the inherent challenge in the fact that it does, these crazy things do happen even to good players. That's the appeal of it. What are your thoughts on that? Would golf be a better game if it was easier?
I think it's an easy game as it is. I mean, after all you got to do is hit it from here to there and put it in the hole. That's not hard.
You reckon?
Most people make it hard because they think hard. All of a sudden they think, I can't do this. And what if I slice it? What if I hook it? What if I top it? And all of a sudden they're not thinking about what they're doing. And the more you play, the more you practice, the more you know you're not going to top it. You've got a fair chance of hitting it in the middle of the bloody green anyway. So it's not all that hard to do. It's more mental than anything else.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there almost a little bit of, you know, stop your whinging and just get on with it?
Yeah.
Internally?
pretty much, yeah.
Bill Dunk with some illuminating thoughts and insights there on a range of topics, and I can tell you that last one did open up quite an interesting discussion, which you will get to hear in next week's instalment, as well as some of Bill's memories of his time playing the US Tour and some of the players he got to see up close and personal around that time. That's next week here on ABS Radio. I hope you can join us. I'm looking forward to your company then.